Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
I'm Anthony Adragna. This is Politico Energy. For more than a decade, as the push for climate policies has moved slowly in Washington, some states have pushed forward with their own climate initiatives, including one that failed to move on a federal level, a carbon pricing system.
We've had carbon pricing, you know, in effect for about a decade now in quite a bit of the country. There's been the Northeast Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative cap on power plant emissions. And then in California, we've had a economy-wide cap and trade system since about 2012, which expanded to cover transportation fuels a couple years later.
Today, my colleague, California Bureau Chief Deborah Kahn, and I explore why carbon pricing has succeeded in many of the nation's largest states and why its success hasn't yet been replicated on the federal level. It's Friday, May 21st. The statistic I saw, I think, is that a quarter of the U.S. population and areas representing a third of U.S. GDP are under some form of carbon price. So this has definitely been tried at the state level now. From the California perspective, how has it worked out? What are the pluses and minuses of carbon pricing out there?
Yeah, there's a lot of pluses and some minuses, too. So I think the first kind of big picture result that we've had is that it's been a fairly stable revenue generator, which has produced the political consensus necessary to kind of give it some staying power. I mean, prices have been pretty low, and the cap has been pretty generous. So on the other hand, you know, so businesses have been okay with paying the approximately, you know, $17 or so per ton. So on one hand, you have kind of buy-in, but then on the other hand, you have on the left, environmental justice and environmental groups who say that the cap is too generous. But there's definitely like a long-running, ongoing debate over what to do about the cap. And in RGGI, they did tighten the cap to reduce supply.
So we obviously cast a pretty wide net here, and we heard from some folks about why some of these statewide lessons in carbon pricing may not immediately translate to Congress. What are some of the differences between federal policymaking and state policymaking that we heard about?
Well, it just seems like they're on two completely different tracks. They're just two separate conversations entirely. And from what I'm talking to people in state about, they just don't really see the two kind of threads connecting, and they think that it's just kind of going, you know, the talk about a clean energy standard is one thing, and who knows what's going to happen with that, right? And then it seems like we're just still many steps off.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I guess a couple of, you know, just observations that I heard in reporting about this is one of the big differences is that when you're making federal policy, you have to take into consideration things like borders and international issues and trade. And there's concerns or just differences there in how these mechanisms would work. I think there's also consensus from advocates now for carbon pricing that it should be one of a suite of options to address climate change. I think even a decade ago, people sort of viewed carbon pricing as potentially a silver bullet. And I think in California and other places, we now know that that's not the case. The conversations, as you mentioned, are ongoing in Congress, and there's sort of this itch, I heard from Sheldon Whitehouse, to basically be ready to go if the opportunity presents itself. You had a chance to speak with Mary Nichols. We remember her from when her potential selection to EPA was derailed over concerns from environmental justice communities about carbon pricing in California. What did she tell you about this issue and about the fact that it's not currently front and center in the Biden administration's toolkit?
You know, she said what we've been saying, that it's kind of on a separate track. But she said, you know, it's not necessarily the first thing that you need to do. You know, you can do it later. So it probably helps to figure out first what your goals are, what your targets are, and then come up with a plan to meet it. So, you know, it sounds like it's something that could come up later, and that's totally fine.
And even with multiple states having their own successful carbon pricing programs, there's still reasons why a federal one would be important. I've heard concerns expressed in the form of competitiveness, and so if you have states that have these programs in place, there's concern that, you know, major economies or industries would go to states that don't have these schemes in place. And so a federal program would kind of standardize that and give everybody a level playing field. One concern that I heard raised, especially from Congressman Kasten, is there really hasn't been much thought about what would happen to existing programs if a federal program were enacted. So what happens to California's slate of policies? What happens to Reggie? And I think lawmakers really haven't grappled with that, as they're still trying to grapple with what the federal policy should actually look like. But it's a big issue that is going to come up in the near future, I think. Also, one of the last of President Joe Biden's cabinet nominees is headed to the Senate floor. Yesterday, the Senate Commerce Committee approved Eric Lander's nomination for the Office of Science and Technology Policy on a bipartisan vote. Lander is the current director of the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard and a renowned geneticist. During his confirmation process, lawmakers have criticized Lander over two meetings he had with the late financier and sex offender Jeffrey Epstein back in 2012, as well as allegations of downplaying the contributions of two female Nobel laureates to gene editing technology. In response, Lander apologized for ignoring his colleague's contribution and minimized the importance of his meetings with Epstein. Still, Lander got bipartisan support from the Commerce Committee, making his confirmation on the Senate floor almost certain. Subscribe to Politico Energy wherever you listen, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want more energy news in your inbox, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. Also, check out the newest episode of our sister podcast, Playbook Deep Dive. On today's show, two of my colleagues on the Hill, Playbook's Rachel Baird and Senate guru Marianne Levine, talk about the push for a commission to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol and the new rifts within the Republican Party over it. Deborah Kahn is Politico California's bureau chief. Carlos Prieto is our producer. Our senior producer is Jenny Ahmet. Irene Noguchi is Politico Audio's executive producer. Our editors are Matt Daly and Gloria Gonzalez. Some of the music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder.
Do you have, like, house beats?
I'm Anthony Dragna, and I'll talk to you on Monday.
Chevron is lowering the carbon emissions intensity of their operations, exploring renewable fuels of the future, and investing in low-carbon technologies. Because it's only human to protect the home we share. Learn more at chevron.com/lowercarbon.